Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttamashloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, on all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And transcendental loving and transcendental service. And loving service, right? What is it? No transcendental there? Anyway, whatever. And loving service under the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So today's verse is Canto 2, Chapter 1, Text 21. Yasyam sandharyamanayam yogino bhakti lakshanah asu sampadyate yoga ashrayam badram ikshata Yasyam sandharyamanayam yogino bhakti lakshanah asho sampadyate yoga ashrayam badram ikshatah yasyam sandharyamanayam yogino bhakti lakshanah ashu sampadyate yoga ashrayam badram ikshatah please chant. Yasyam sandharyamanayam yogino bhakti lakshana ashu sampadyate yoga ashrayam bhajyam ikshata. Yasyam sandharyamanayam yogino bhakti lakshana ashu sampadyate yoga ashrayam bhajyam ikshata. Yasyam sandharyamanayam
Yogino Bhakti Lakshana. Ashu Sampadyate Yoga. Ashrayam Bhadramikshataha. Yasyam Sandaryamanayam. Yogino Bhakti Lakshana. Ashu Sampadyate Yoga. Ashrayam Bhadram Ikshataha.
And one more lady.
Jajam Sandaryamanayam. Yogino Bhakti Lakshana. Ashu Sampadyate Yoga. Ashram Bhadram Ikshataha Yasyam.
By such systematic remembrance,
Sandaryamanayam.
And thus being fixed in the habit of
Yoginaha,
the mystics,
the
Bhakti
Lakshana,
being practiced to devotional service,
system,
it was my fault. Ashu, very soon, Sampadyate, attain success. Yoga, connection by devotional service. Ashrayam, under the shelter of. Bhadram, the all good. Ikshataha, which seeing that. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O King, by this system of remembrance and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all good personal conception of the Lord, one can very soon attain devotional service to the Lord under his direct shelter. So let's say it together, all at once. O King, by this system of remembrance and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all good personal conception of the Lord, one can very soon attain devotional service to the Lord under his direct shelter. Purport. Success of mystic performances is achieved only by the help of devotional attitude. Pantheism, or the system of feeling the presence of the Almighty everywhere, is a sort of training of the mind to become accustomed to the devotional conception. And it is the devotional attitude of the mystic that makes possible the successful termination of such mystic attempts. One is not, however, elevated to such a successful status without the tinge of mixture in devotional service. The devotional atmosphere created by pantheistic vision develops into devotional service in later days. And that is the only benefit for the impersonalist. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 12.5 that the impersonal way of self-realization is more troublesome because it reaches the goal in an indirect way, although the impersonalist also becomes obsessed with the personal feature of the Lord after a long, 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 long time. Translation, O King, by this system of remembrance and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Lord, one can very soon attain devotional service to the Lord under his direct shelter. So what did Prabhupada say in the purport? Gopal? What has to be tinged with devotion? You're correct. Mystic yoga or any other process of yoga. Anything else that you remember? Pantheism is a training to see the Almighty everywhere. And what was the definition of pantheism? What is the definition of pantheism? Pantheism, the person, it's not so much personal, but it's by seeing the Almighty, which is kind of like a vague conception, right? almighty, powerful, the spirit. But it leads one. Anything else? That the impersonalists also get obsessed by the impersonal, by the personal form of the Lord. Long, long time. And what was the verse that wasn't quoted but was recited? In what number is that? 12th chapter of which book? Bhagavad Gita 12:5. Klesho dikaritastasyas. And what does that mean? Very difficult. Very difficult. So, as you can tell, I didn't prepare anything, so I'm going to make you guys give the class. No. So what is it that's so troublesome about the impersonal? What is that impersonal conception that's so troublesome? Why is it so troublesome? Gopal? Because you can't fix your mind on nothing. It's true. It's always going somewhere. Arjunaji? Oh, that's another good point. Hold on a second. I got to tell Sunanda. Because he's saying is that it's based on one's own endeavor. And then what? But in Bhakti Yoga, it's the shelter. One takes shelter of the Lord. That's a good point. Very good point. Because by how can one attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate realization, by one's own endeavor? Such a great, even just the conception of God is so great, and our abilities are so minute. How can one attain? It's the us. How can one go by the ascending process? But our process in Bhakti Yoga is the descending process. The knowledge is coming, it's given by the Lord and carried down by the parampara, and it's given in perfect form to the aspiring participant. And therefore, it's complete. Can you think of an analogy that is that a question? Okay. Can you think of an analogy that explains that parampara system? Daniel? Okay, so he gives the analogy of the mango being, that's the most ripe mango is on the top part of the tree, and it's passed down by different hands or by the parampara to the bottom, and therefore the mango, the fruit, is intact. It's not changed in any way. Very important concept. We spoke about it a little bit last week, and I'm sure it's been touched on in these other verses, about how getting knowledge that hasn't been changed is very, very, it's very important. Because how can we, with our imperfect senses and our imperfect endeavor, be able to conceive of the absolute truth and improve on it or explain it, but actually comes down, not changed by the Lord. So what so Sukadev Goswami Maharaj Parikit there, what's happening here in this chapter? Why is he talking about this now? What do you remember from your previous verses? How did we get to this point? What's the thread that's being described? So Maharaj Parikit, he's asking, what's the duty of a man about to die? What's the process of self-realization? So Sukadev Goswami is replying, he's responding, giving a process in step by a gradual process of self-realization. In fact, First Steps in God Realization is the name of the chapter. So he goes from the impersonal conception to the personal conception, from impersonal, which is a bona fide process of spiritual realization, to realize that there is a unified spirit that's pervading everywhere. But to go from that to the personal conception of the Lord, that's systematic, and that's progress in spiritual. That's a higher level. That's the end. So what are the Sanskrit terms for those different levels of God realization? Maybe. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So these are the steps in God realization. So understanding the Brahman conception of the Lord is to understand the unified spirit behind everything, the equality of that spirit. Paramatma conception is to realize that the Supreme is within my heart and in the heart of all other living entities. It's also a very elevated stage of realization. But beyond that, and even more so than that, is the ultimate realization that the Supreme Lord is a person and he has personal activities. He has his own personal identity. And we have a relationship with that Lord in service, in a variety of service. And there can be a variety of service. So if one's realizing the Bhagavan feature, and the idea is that when one realizes the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he automatically has an understanding of Brahman realization and Paramatma realization. But that doesn't hold through for the other conceptions. If one is on the Brahman platform, then they don't have, obviously, they don't have any conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But on the other hand, if one is coming to this platform of Bhagavan realization, which our parampara is bringing us to, then automatically is information is given about Krishna's energy that's all-pervading, like the sun. The energy of the sun pervades through the entire universe in the form of heat and light. So we can understand that the sun is up now because it's light out. We can also understand that the presence of the sun by the heat. But the sun itself isn't here in the room. But that so similarly, like Krishna's energy pervades all throughout the universe, in like the example of the heat and light of the sun. But he's not personally present there, yet simultaneously he is personally present there. So it's a chinta beta and a beta tattva. Simultaneously one and different. This inconceivable potency of the Lord, Srila Jiva Goswami, he explains that unless you accept, right, unless you can accept that the Lord has inconceivable potency, you'll never get a good conception of the Lord. Unless we can understand that the Lord can do things that we can't conceive of, he can do everything that we can think of, and he can do things that are way beyond our power of imagination or intelligence to understand. Unless we can accept that the Lord is unlimitedly great and we are minutely infinitesimal small, then you really don't have a clear conception of God. And oftentimes people will argue on the basis of God realization, on the basis of the power of their own brains, their own conception. That's so limited. So limited. So here in this purport is explaining that this process of mystic yoga that's being described, or any of the processes of yoga, they won't have any success at all unless there's some devotional attitude. So bhakti yoga is the highest and most potent form of realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Prabhupada explains, it's the easiest to perform too. Because in these other processes of yoga, as you might remember from your, or you'll become familiar with as you study Bhagavad Gita and that description of the yoga ladder, the other processes of yoga require such a high level of qualification just to begin them. Just like the process of jnana yoga, unless one is extremely intelligent and very philosophically inclined and able to grasp these difficult philosophical concepts, unless one is extremely renounced and not engaged in any sort of have any attachment or to relationships at all, then one can't begin that process. Just like even in the Sankracharya, even that's impersonal yoga, you can't even begin on that level unless you take sannyas. Then you can start. So you have to have such a high level of qualification even for starting. But Nectar Devotion explains that the qualification to start the process of bhakti yoga, do you know what that is? What's the qualification? What are the qualification to start? Human life? Yeah, okay. Faith? Yeah, faith. Faith and desire. Simply the desire, which is based on faith. Simply the desire to start is the qualification. So we're, you know, so that can be distributed in this age of Kali when people have no qualifications for a spiritual discipline at all. Now, in the previous purport, verse and purport, Srila Prabhupada was talking about becoming elevated from the modes of passion and ignorance, and how unless one becomes situated in the mode of goodness, then you can't actually even take up much process of spiritual life. You won't make much progress in spiritual life. So the whole process of sadhana bhakti, which is this discipline of training, of rising early, showering, coming to chant, chanting for the deities, and chanting the holy names, taking prasadam, hearing the Bhagavatam, all of these things bring one not only to the platform of goodness, but to Sudasattva, the supreme goodness, but they purify the mind and the senses, and they regulate us and sort of detach us from the passionate mode of life that we're involved in just by circumstance, and bring us to this level of calming the mind and the senses so that they can be attracted to hearing. Because if the mind's not calm, if the mind's running all over the place, then it's very hard to sit and hear. Prabhupada would say that even in Kali Yuga, people can't even sit for very long. We're so wiggly. We can't even sit for very long because we're so much pushed by the modes, passion, ignorance, whatever, that we can't even sit still for very long. So this whole process of regulated spiritual life brings us, calms the influence of ignorance and passion. And the influence of ignorance is such that we're a little lazy, we're a little sleepy in the morning, so many things. We might want to do it for some times, but we don't want to do it every day. Do you ever get that feeling that you don't really want to do this every day? Yeah. It's good to ignore that one. Because that's the influence of the modes of nature. But the mode of goodness is one can do it repeatedly, regularly, and systematically. And that was mentioned too also in the verse about system of remembrance, and then the yasyam, by systematic remembrance. What do you think the benefit, let's talk about that for a minute, systematic remembrance. What do you think, why didn't it just say remembrance? What's the difference between remembrance and systematic remembrance? Okay, very good. It becomes a habit and then one can do it more often. Okay, but it has to do with the quality of remembrance. Olivia? More of a commitment. Very good. Okay. Anyone else? Some thoughts on that? Daniel? It has a process. In other words, it has a beginning. It has, like you say, steps. In other words, like we're taking the Bhagavatam, we're taking first canto, second canto, third canto. We're studying Bhagavad Gita. We're studying whatever, Nectar Devotion, so many other books in a systematic way. Now, we could, and a person would get benefit if they just pick up the book and read it a little bit here. Goes. They'll get some benefit, but a systematic study, step by step, from the first canto through all 12 cantos, one will get a very solid foundation. A very solid foundation of your information of Krishna and his potencies and his incarnations. It'll be very solid. So then when one gets to the 10th canto and hears of his personal activities, one won't confuse him with an ordinary person doing ordinary things that appear like that, similar to what he does. So you have a systematic understanding. Prabhupada also, and the acharyas, and obviously the scriptures, recommend a systematic study, a regulated way, going from beginning to end in a disciplined fashion. But then again, even that, one has to have the influence of the mode of goodness in order to do that. In our passionate lifestyle, it's not like we might not have time to just do it like that. So anything you can do, that's great. Pick it up and read it. You know, anything you can do, that's good. But better if you can shape your life in such a way that you're able to go through it in a regulated fashion from beginning to end, because it's the knowledge is like stacked on one another. You know, the information of the Brahman realization is very important to understand, and also the information of Paramatma realization is also very good. And when one understands Brahman, and then they get a better conception of Paramatma, and similarly, and for the Bhagavan realization, understand all three platforms. And then when you actually, that's what makes the beauty of the presentation of Krishna consciousness so complete. Because even we can, previously to coming to read Srila Prabhupada's books and understanding the little bit that we do understand, it was so confusing to see how so many different philosophies there are, so many different religious beliefs there are in the world. And you're thinking, like, how to figure it out? How to figure out, you know, what's better, what's worse, what's true, what's not true? So many different beliefs. But actually, from understanding things in the perspective of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, you can see where the different philosophies come in. They have a partial explanation here, or a partial explanation of this level. But through this conception of the three of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, then you can understand fully all of the different where they got their conception from, and how Bhagavan conception is a little superior, very superior, the most superior. So now it's up to you. You have any questions or comments? Anything? Shruti.
So sometimes we meet people who are very much into the impersonalist concept of life, and which is one of it, as you mentioned. So, but then, and then when we try to tell them about the personal features, they go, what? No. So at that, and they have most of them, like, whom I meet, and they have impersonalist ideas, they have a hard time digesting and hearing that there is a personal feature. Mm-hmm. So how should we deal with them? Should we, like, say, okay, you know, stay wherever you are, and hopefully this lifetime, maybe next lifetime?
Sometimes, so the impersonal conception of the Lord and the process of understanding the Lord through that impersonalistic yoga, it's a bona fide process of self-realization. But what's being presented today is not much of anything. It's just a hodgepodge of, you know, misconceptions. So that makes it a little difficult to try to, you know, deal with that. But there are some really simple analogies. So personally, I really like analogies, the analogies that are there in the scriptures, because they help one grasp a philosophical concept in really simple terms. So what can you think? So give me some analogies about the superiority of personal realization as opposed to impersonal realization, or anything that shows how impersonal realization leaves one dissatisfied or is difficult to achieve. And Olivia?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounds like a bewildering situation.
You can say that you love them, and you, but really you can't talk about them, and you can't even point them out. And then another thing as to why impersonalism isn't sufficient, I feel, is because it doesn't really satisfy the human. Like, it's in our nature to desire, like, a personal, intimate relationship, and also to desire kind of a unifying, like, a family unit. So, like, that personal, intimate relationship is found, like, during japa with Krishna, and then we have this family, like, kirtan, where we're worshiping Krishna. So, impersonalism, you don't really get that. Like, where are the relationships with that?
Thank you. That's a good point. And that's a very important point, too, because everybody has a desire to love. Everybody has a... That's like a human trait. Without love, there's no... And for someone, Prabhupada explains oftentimes, and if someone doesn't have any person to love, then what do? They get a dog. They'll serve the dog. And you see people, they're totally attached to that because some or other, the different... familial relationships might have been a tad frustrating, but the dog, the one with the dog is like the most satisfying but that's a sign that we are persons. Thank you for sharing that. Any other analogies you can think of? Are you volunteering?
Yes, on the dog, I was just going to mention that, yes, it said for a lady, if you lock your husband and your dog in the trunk for 6 hours, see which one will be happy to see you when you open it.
Well, thanks for that. Anything else you'd like to share with
us?
Yes,
I would. The example is given of the president or a highly placed executive. You can know that person's energies, their powers, their legislative powers. You can know their writings or their speeches, their accomplishments. But if you know them in person, then your knowledge includes all of those other things, but it also includes their personal traits and personality.
Thank you. That's another very good example, too. And just like sometimes people can't understand these basic concepts, but just to see someone like a president, right? Because, you know, how many times are we going to meet President Obama or whatever, you know? But we hear all about him through the media and this and that. And you could say that you know him to some extent, but we don't really know him. But and he has a side that he has interface through the you know, in his role of the President of the United States, but he has also other interface with his wife and his children in different ways, and his mother, you know. It's a different way. It's a different understanding. It's a more complete understanding. How are we going to help Shruti Sagar with his impersonalistic friends? What do we do with them? Gopal?
Just feed them prasadam and
Krishna lunch pijai.
Yeah, right. Let them engage in kirtan, and they must have some attachment because they come here anyways, you know.
Yeah. Another thing is too. Oftentimes, when you're meeting people that don't seem to get it or don't seem, they still hear it. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that because they didn't, you know, come and join Krishna house or whatever right away that they're not hearing or not understanding. The soul hears. So, you know, we can pray to the Lord, to Srila Prabhupada, to the spiritual master, just to please let me be the instrument. Maybe there's something, you know, what I'm totally insignificant, but maybe there's something that I can say that will help that person make further progress. It kind of like resonates for a while. Sit around and resonate for a while. And I was just hearing last night, and we were reading the Bhagavatam, and this one person was saying how they had a friend who was into impersonalistic yoga, and he was saying to her, he said, "But how can you live in a world where there's no love? Love is the basic quality of the human being. If there's no conception and no possibility to have a loving relationship, how can you find that to be satisfying?" So the person didn't answer. The person didn't have an answer. And neither did that person immediately change their, you know, and give up their thing. But it has an effect. It has an effect. And if they are hearing the Hare Krishna mantra and taking prasadam, then that will have its effect gradually, gradually. And we're just little instruments. We might not be that big, huge hammer that, you know, nails the big nail, but we're just little instruments. You have to. So it's up to you. Anything you want to talk about?
I just wanted to question related to this impersonalist. Like I talked to two or three impersonalists in my stay here, like which are very strong, try to explain them, explain everything, but they'll never change the stance, and it's probably they are also going through some experience. Like they have faith on impersonalism, and they are going through some experience which. So even if we give arguments, they are not listening to those arguments because they have experienced this now. So they think that it's working. So I guess only a person who is more sincere, who actually wants, like, I mean, I was reading books by Vivekananda earlier, but like I didn't get it. It was impersonal before. Like only when I came here, I found that. But I was looking for an answer, like what's from scripture. So I found, when I came here, I got a good understanding of from Bhagavad Gita. So I took to this process, like, and gave up.
And we're glad you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But I think the impersonalists, those people are going through some kind of experience that keeps them attached to it. Is it based on, is it like bona fide what they're experiencing or not? Like for example, one person came and he said, Chris, he said that they feel like when they see everything around, he feels one with everything. So is that a bona fide experience, feeling one with everything around? Is that a
That's explained. That was explained in these last few verses. How, and that's actually the pantheistic conception. So it is, in the true sense, a bona fide process and level and platform of realization, but. We also have to have an understanding that in this day and age, it's very difficult to practice those processes the way they're meant to be practiced. Just like yoga. Yoga is a term that's thrown around so freely this day and age. But when you study what's meant by yoga from Bhagavad Gita, then what you see as presented as yoga in this day and age, it's a totally different, watered down, different thing. It's different. So that modernized, watered down concoction called yoga or even called impersonalism, they're not going to get the highest thing. They're not going to get the result that one would get if one, because what does Prabhupada say? What does Krishna say how to practice yoga? Go to a secluded place. You know, it has to be a sacred place. The seat has to be so high, you know, like that. So that's what we were talking about.
Some of them try to go to these forest rainbow gathering. Like I remember, when I met Chris, he uh-huh. came. He had like spent like 10 days in the forest, uh-huh. but he couldn't live there due to the like. Other
well, so people. They're getting something from it, probably. Mosquito bites. You know, they're getting something from it, but it's not a bona fide thing. So therefore, whatever little sense of oneness that they feel, that's okay, that's nice, but is it really an understanding? Is it real a real understanding of what the unity with the Lord actually is? Or is it their concocted conception? And even though they're feeling one with the universe, they're still eating abominable foodstuffs or whatever, you know. It's not really, they can't get it because it's very difficult to be practiced properly. And it's just like if I told you, what is it? What's your field of study? Aerodynamics or what? Mechanical engineering? So if I told you, because now you've been through so many years of study, if I told you, oh yeah, I have a great book that tells me a little bit about mechanical engineering, and I read it, and I really know it, and now I'm doing my own thing. And you'd say, well, you know, what would you think? This lady's nuts, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. Or I have some small conception, but it's very small, right? So what does nuts and bolts, right? And that's about it, right? You know? So even what to speak of, like, something like a brain surgeon. So you're having some pain in your head, and this person has a sign out. I read all the books on brain surgery. Come to me. I can give you a great operation for, you know, $200. Would you go there? You know what I mean? You wouldn't. Nobody in their right mind would go there. That's a pun. No. You know, nobody would do that. You know, you wouldn't even consider it. But still, we have such a vague understanding. We think, I'm okay, you're okay for spiritual life. And if you think this is spiritual, that's good. Just don't preach to me because I've got my own conception of what spiritual life, and we're all just hunky-dory, you know, neatsy-keen together. You know, like, come on. That might make you feel good for a few minutes, and it might, you know, but it has no real basis in reality. Vaishna?
I mean, I think the same thing applies to demigod worshippers also. They have a lot of faith. My mother used to have a lot of faith in worshipping Durga. And she gave many instances when she cited many instances when she felt that Mother Durga was with her. So they are getting a lot of faith out of it because that's actually a bona fide process. So any person really, by the impersonalist demigod worshipper, is actually trapped in that situation. And unless a pure devotee comes and lifts him up and then gives him a chance to give him pure bhakti.
That's a good point also. Thank you for sharing that. But also, too, there's the bona fide conception of impersonal Brahman. And there's the bona fide conception of Paramatma and Bhagavan. And just the tiny brain, the tiny endeavor by a person, it doesn't really reach that real flavor of what's there, what's to be offered. So like in the case of demigod worshippers, now Krishna says, whatever you want to put your faith, he says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever you want to put your faith in, I will help you and make your faith strong so that you can worship those demigods and see that they're all in all. So it is a bona fide process. And if one does it properly, one will gradually become elevated in their concept. Because they'll see, because Krishna says, I'm giving those demigods the ability to fulfill the desires of their worshippers. And so, just like, let's take another example. Let's go even a step back. When it talks about on the yoga ladder, those people who perform different yugas, different sacrifices for some materialistic purpose, like maybe they want to be elevated to the heavenly planets, or they want a long life, or they want this, or they want that. So they perform, they approach the Brahmins or the scriptures, they say, if you want a long life, then you have to do this. If you want to do this, then you have to do that. So they do those things. And gradually, after doing those things, what happens? They get faith that if I follow this process, then I'll get this result. So, and then after doing that for many lifetimes, then they'll see, well, if I get elevated to the heavenly planets and live an extremely long life there, still, it's not a permanent situation. I still have to come down again. So then you think, is there anything more than this then? Going up and coming down. And, you know, so it's a gradual process. a long, gradual process. But still, it's a benefit because it's putting your faith in an authorized scriptural element of the Lord. So it's an authorized process and one gets benefit. But the result is it takes a long time to actually get out of the material world. Whereas the Prabhupada explains the process of bhakti yoga, it's like an elevator. You can climb up to the top of the building by going up the stairs. That's okay, you'll get there. But you could also take the elevator.
I just wanted to add one thing. In the time of difficulty, an impersonalist may fall down. But a personalist sees that an opportunity for advancement. Probably that's one thing I observe may happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes?
It's just my... I could be wrong, my opinion. I think when we use the word impersonalist, it's not that cheap that our friends who think... They're actually more to a confused person. They're not impersonalists. A real impersonalist is one who has a guru from the Sampradaya who's properly practicing.
That's a nice point.
And he's completely... I don't think in impersonal process we can go to school, study and do all these material activities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a...
That's a good point, too. We have that. We throw the term around quite loosely. True. Yeah. Arjuna?
Don't they practice on their own and everything? Because it says in the Shastra that only a Vaishnava can be guru. Other persons cannot be guru.
Yeah. That. But there's like Shankaracharya. He was the guru. And he was teaching them how. So they have a guru, but he's teaching them. But he's,
the difference is...
It's okay.
For impersonalists, they have their guru, but the guru is like... And then once they have realized, then they become equal. For us, the guru is always for the spiritual.
Part of the fourth word, where it just says something like successful termination of mystic process.
Yes. Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? Thanks. When I read that, I also... Okay, so pantheism, or this is from the purport. Pantheism, or the system of feeling the presence of the Almighty everywhere, is a sort of training of the mind to become accustomed to the devotional conception. And it is this devotional attitude of the mystic that makes it possible for the successful termination of such mystic attempts. In other words, that mystic yoga... Even when one... So mystic attempts. So what are the mystic cities? There's 8 cities that are there that one can attain by performing this particular type of mystic yoga. Become smaller than the smaller, bigger than the biggest, to be able to create universes, so many things, those mystic potencies that are there. And one gets distracted on their path. Although it's a bona fide process, one gets distracted by the potencies. And that, in order to finish that process, to rise above it, one has to take to the process of bhakti yoga and realize that this is not the all in all. This is not the ultimate. The ultimate is even further beyond that. So the process of mystic yoga is not the end of the ladder. Okay. You want to...
Well, I thought it was quite...
I guess I have to speak into the microphone. I thought it was quite interesting that Srila Prabhupada uses this term, successful termination. So it sort of, it goes with... He starts the sentence saying that feeling the presence of the Almighty everywhere is a training of the mind to become accustomed to the devotional conception. So by maintaining this attitude, it terminates your desire to want to engage in these mystic processes.
Exactly. Exactly. And unless those, and actually not only that desire, but all your other material desires too, which keep you, then that's the process of bhakti yoga. It's the only one that the whole where desires are completely eradicated in the sense of by gaining the higher taste, the lesser things are given up very easily. So here's your favorite prayer.